116. Alone. We took them in as commanded by the gods. What else could we do? They were a people forlorn without a home. Our pity destroyed us, for their betrayal extended even to our gods, to Spren, Stone, and Wind. From the Aela Steely. Caladan thought he could hear the wind as he stepped from beneath the obsidian trees. Syl said this place had no wind. Yet was that the tinkling of glass leaves as they quivered? Was that the sigh of cool, fresh air coursing around him? He'd come far in the last half year. He seemed a man distant from the one who carried bridges against Parshendi arrows. That man had welcomed death. But now, even on the bad days when everything was cast in grays, he defied death. It could not have him, for while life was painful, life was also sweet. He had Syl, he had the men of Bridge Four, and most importantly, he had purpose. Today Caladan would protect Dalinar Kholin. He strode toward the sea of souls that marked the existence of Thalen City on the other side. Many of those souls' flames, in ranks, had turned sharply red. He shivered to think what that meant. He stepped up onto the bridge, beads churning below, and reached the highest point in its arc before the enemy noticed him. Six fused, turned, and rose into the air, arraying to regard him. They raised long spears, then looked to the sides, seeming shocked. One man? Alone? Caladan set one foot back, gently scraping the tip of his boot against the white marble bridge, and fell into a combat posture. He hooked the harpoon in a one-handed underarm grip, letting out a long breath. Then he drew in all of his stormlight and burst alight. Within the power's embrace, a lifetime's worth of moments seemed to snap into place. Throwing gas to the ground in the rain, screaming in defiance while charging at the front of a bridge, coming awake in the practice grounds during the weeping, fighting the assassin on the storm wall. The fused leaped for him, trailing long cloaks and robes. Caladan lashed himself straight upward and took to the sky for the first time in what had been far, far too long. Dalinar stumbled as the ground shook again. A second sequence of cracks sounded outside. He was too low down in the city now to see past the city wall, but he feared he knew what that breaking stone must signify. A second thunderclast. Violet fierce-spren sprouted from the streets all around as civilians shouted and screamed. Dalinar had made his way down through the central section of the city, the part called the Ancient Ward, and had just entered the Low Ward, the bottom portion nearest the city wall. The steps behind him were filling with people who fled upward, toward the Oath Gate. As the trembling subsided, Dalinar grabbed the arm of a young mother who was pounding frantically on the door of a building. He sent her running up the steps with her child in her arms. He needed these people off the streets, preferably taking shelter at Yirithiru, so they wouldn't get caught between clashing armies. Dalinar felt his age as he jogged past the next row of buildings, still clutching the Way of Kings under his arm. He had barely any spears on him, an oversight, but neither did he have plate or blade. This would be his first battle in many, many years without shards. He'd insisted on stepping out of those boots, and would have to let Amaram and other shard-bearers command the field. How was Amaram faring? Last Dalinar had seen, the High Prince had been arranging his archers, but from this low in the city Dalinar couldn't see the troops outside. A sudden feeling slammed into him. It was focus and passion, an eager energy, a warmth, a promise of strength, glory, life. To Dalinar, this thirst for the battle felt like the attentions of a lover you'd turned away long ago. The thrill was here, his old dear friend. No, he whispered, sagging against a wall. The emotion struck him harder than the earthquake had. No. The taste was so, so appealing. It whispered that he could save this city all on his own. Let the thrill in and the Blackthorn could return. He didn't need shards. He only needed this passion, sweeter than any wine. No! He shoved the thrill aside, scrambling to his feet. As he did, however, a shadow moved beyond the wall. A monster of stone, one of the beasts from his visions, standing some 30 feet tall, looming over the 20-foot city wall. The thunderclast clasped its hands together, then swung them low, crashing them through the city wall, flinging out chunks of stone. Dalinar leaped toward cover, but a falling boulder pounded into him, crushing him into a wall. Blackness. Falling. Power. He gasped, and stormlight flooded into him. He shook awake to find his arm pinned by the boulder, rocks and dust falling on a rubble-strewn street before him, and not just rubble. He coughed, realizing some of those lumps were bodies coated in dust lying motionless. He struggled to pull his arm from under the boulder. Nearby, the thunderclast kicked at the broken wall, opening a hole. Then it stepped through, footfalls shaking the ground, approaching the shelf that made up the front of the ancient ward. A massive stone foot thumped to the ground by Dalinar. Storms! Dalinar hauled on his arm, heedless of the pain or the damage to his body, and finally got it free. The stormlight healed him as he crawled away, ducking as the monster ripped the roof off a building at the front of the ancient ward and sent debris raining down. The gemstone reserve? The monster cast the roof aside and several fused that he'd missed before, they were riding on its shoulders, slipped down into the building. Dalinar was torn between heading for the battlefield outside and investigating whatever was going on here. "Any idea what they're after?" he asked the Stormfather.
"No, this is odd behavior."
In a flash decision, Dalinar yanked his book out from under some rubble nearby, then went running back up the now empty steps to the ancient ward, dangerously close to the thunderclast. The monster released a sudden piercing roar like a thunderclap. The shockwave almost knocked Dalinar off his feet again. In a fit of rage, the titanic creature attacked the gemstone reserve, ripping apart its walls and innards, tossing chunks backward. A million sparkling bits of glass caught the sunlight as they fell over the city, the wall, and beyond.
"Spheres and gemstones," Dalinar realized. "All the wealth of Thelena, scattered like leaves."
The thing seemed increasingly angry as it pounded the area around the reserve. Dalinar put his back to a wall as two fused darted past, led by what appeared to be a glowing yellow spren. These two fused didn't seem to be able to fly, but there was a startling grace to their motion. They slid along the stone street with no apparent effort, as if the ground were greased. Dalinar gave chase, squeezing past a group of scribes huddled in the street, but before he could catch up, the fused attacked one palanquin among the many trying to move through the crowds. They knocked it over, shoving aside the porters, and dug inside. The fused ignored Dalinar's shouts. They soon streaked away, one tucking a large object under its arm. Dalinar drew in stormlight from some fleeing merchants, then ran the rest of the distance to the palanquin. Amid the wreckage, he found a young Thalen woman alongside an elderly man who appeared to have been previously wounded, judging by the bandages. Dalinar helped the dazed woman to a sitting position.
"What did they want?"
"Right, Lord," she said in Thalen.
She blinked, then seized his arm.
"The king's drop. A ruby. They tried to steal it before, and now they've taken it."
"A ruby? A simple gemstone?" The porters attended to the old man, who was barely conscious. Dalinar looked over his shoulder at the retreating thunderclast. The enemy had ignored the wealth of the gemstone reserve. Why would they want a specific ruby? He was about to press for more details when something else drew his attention. From this higher vantage, he could see through the hole the thunderclast had broken in the wall. Figures outside with glowing red eyes arrayed themselves on the battlefield, but they weren't parshmen. Those were Satius uniforms.
Yasna moved into the temple, gripping her shard blade, stepping on slippered feet. The red spren rising from Renarin, like a snowflake made of crystal and light, seemed to sense her and panicked, disappearing into Renarin with a puff. "A spren is," Ivory said. "The wrong spren is." Renarin Kolin was a liar. He was no truth watcher. That is a spren of odium, Ivory said. Corrupted spren, but a human? Bonded to one? This thing is not. It is, Jasnah whispered. Somehow. She was now close enough to hear Renarin whispering, No. Not. Father. No. Please. Shallan wove light. A simple illusion recalled from the pages of her sketchpad. Some soldiers from the army, people from Urethiru, and some of the spren she'd sketched on her trip. Around 20 individuals in total. Tarn's nails, Adolin said as Kaladin shot upward through the sky. The bridge boy's really into it. Kaladin drew away four of the fused, but two remained behind. Shallan added an illusion of azure to her group, then some of the reachers she'd drawn. She hated using up so much stormlight. What if she didn't have enough left to get through the Oath Gate? Good luck, she whispered to Adolin. Remember, I won't be controlling these directly. They will make only rudimentary motions. We'll be fine. Adolin glanced at Pattern, Syl, and the spren of his sword. Right, guys? Pattern said. I do not like being stabbed. Wise words, friend. Wise words. Adolin gave Shallan a kiss. Then they took off running toward the bridge. Syl, Pattern, and the Deadeye followed, as did the illusions, which were bound to Adolin. This force drew the attention of the last two fused. As those were distracted, Shallan slipped over to the base of the bridge, then eased herself down into the beads. She crossed silently beneath the bridge, using precious stormlight to make herself a safe walking platform with one of the beads she'd found while on Honor's Path. She made her way across to the small island platform that represented the Oath Gate on this side. Two enormous spren stood above it. Judging by the shouting on the bridge, Adolin and the others were doing their job. But could Shallan do hers? She stepped up beneath the two sentinels, which stood tall as buildings, reminiscent of statues in armor. One mother of pearl, the other black, with a variegated oily shimmer. Did they guard the Oath Gate? Or did they, somehow, facilitate its workings? At a loss for what else to do, Shallan simply waved her hand. Hello? Steadily, two heads turned down toward her. The air around Venli, once crowded by the spirits of the dead, was now empty save for the single black figure of swirling smoke. She'd missed that one at first, as it was the size of a normal person. It stood near Odium, and she did not know what it represented. The second thunderclast dragged arms as long as its body, with hands like hooks. It crossed the field eastward toward the city walls and the human army of turncoats. Just behind Venli to the west, the common singers stood arrayed before their ships. They stayed far from the red mist of the unmade coating the north side of the battlefield. Odium stood beside Venli, a glowing force of burning gold. The first thunderclast left the city and placed something down on the ground. Two of the fused, gods with lithe bodies and little armor. They skirted the turncoat army, sliding along the rock with an uncanny grace. What is that they carry? Venli asked. A gemstone? Is that why we came here? A rock?
No, Odium said. That is merely a precaution, a last-minute addition I made to prevent a potential disaster. The prize I claim today is far greater, even more grand than the city itself, the conduit of my freedom, the Bane of Roshar. Forward, child, to the gap in the wall. I may need you to speak for me.
She swallowed, then started hiking toward the city. The dark spirit followed, the one of swirling mists, the last who had yet to inhabit a body.
Kaladin soared through this place of black heavens, haunted clouds, and a distant sun. Only four of the fused had chosen to take off after him. Adolin would have to deal with the other two. The four flew with precision. They used lashings like Kaladin did, though they didn't seem to be able to vary their speed as much as he could. It took them longer to build up to greater lashings, which should have made it easy to stay ahead of them. But storms, the way they flew. So graceful. They didn't jerk this way or that, but flowed lithely from one motion to the next. They used their entire bodies to sculpt the wind of their passing and control their flight. Even the assassin in white hadn't been so fluid as these, so like the winds themselves. Kaladin had claimed the skies, but storms had looked like he'd moved into territory where someone had a prior entitlement. I don't have to fight them, he thought. I only have to keep them busy long enough for Shallan to figure out how to activate the portal. Kaladin lashed himself upward toward those strange two-flat clouds. He twisted in the air and found one of the fused almost upon him. A male with pale white skin swirled through with a single marbling of red like smoke blown across the cheeks. The creature stabbed its long spear at him, but Kaladin lashed himself to the side just in time. Lashing wasn't flying, and that was part of its strength. Kaladin didn't have to be facing any specific direction to move in the air. He fell up and slightly to the north, but fought while facing downward, battering away the enemy lance with his harpoon. The fused's weapon was far longer, with sharpened sides rather than a single fine point. Kaladin's harpoon was at a severe disadvantage. Right. Time to change that. As the fused rammed the lance upward again, Kaladin reached out with both hands on his harpoon's haft, holding it sideways. He let the enemy spear pass into the opening between his arms, chest, and harpoon. He lashed his own weapon downward with multiple lashings. Then he dropped it. It slid along the length of the lance and smacked into the fused's arms. The creature shouted in pain, letting go of his weapon. At the same moment, Kaladin dove, canceling all upward lashings, and bunding himself downward instead. The sudden jarring change made his stomach lurch and his vision go black. Even with stormlight, this was almost too much. His ears ringing, he gritted his teeth, riding the momentary loss of sight until, blessedly, his vision returned. He spun in the air, then pulled up and snatched the falling lance as it dropped past him. The four fused swooped after him, more cautious. The wind of his passing chilled the sweat on his face from his near blackout.
Let's not try that again, Kaladin thought, hefting his new weapon.
He'd practiced with things like this in pike walls, but they were normally too long to maneuver in one-on-one combat. Flying would negate that. The fused he'd disarmed swooped down to fetch the harpoon. Kaladin waved his hand toward the other's palm upward, then took off toward some nearby dark obsidian mountains, forested on the sides, the direction he and the others had come. Down below, he could see Shallan's illusions engaging the two fused on the bridge.
Eyes forward, Kaladin thought as the four others chased after him.
He belonged in the skies with these creatures. Time to prove it. Prime Akasix Yonagon I, Emperor of Al-Makabak, paced in the cabin of his ship. He was actually starting to feel like an emperor. He wasn't embarrassed talking to the viziers and scions any longer. He understood much of what they discussed now and didn't jump when someone called him Your Majesty. Remarkably, he was starting to forget that he'd ever been a frightened thief sneaking through the palace. But then, even an emperor had limits to his rule. He paced back the other way. Regal robes of Azish patterns weighed him down, along with the imperial Yuana Zixin, a fancy hat with sweeping sides. He'd have taken the thing off, but he felt he needed its authority when talking to his three most important advisors.
Lif thinks we should have stayed, he said. War is coming to Thalen City.
We are merely protecting our fleet from the storm, Nora said.
Pardon, Vizier, but that's a load of chul dung, and you know it. We left because you're worried that Kolin is being manipulated by the enemy.
That is not the only reason,
Sion Unokwa said. He was an old man with a full paunch.
We have always been skeptical of the Lost Radiance.
The powers that Dalinar Kholin wishes to harness are extremely dangerous, as now proven by the translations of an ancient record.
Lift says, Yonagon said.
Lift,
Nora said. You listen to her far too much, your Imperial Majesty. She's smart. She once tried to eat your cummerbund. She thought it sounded like a type of dessert. Yonagon took a deep breath.
Besides, she's not that kind of smart. She's the other kind.
What other kind, your Imperial Majesty?
Vizier Dalksy asked. Her hair was powder white, peeking out beneath her formal headdress.
The kind that knows when it's wrong to betray a friend. I think we should go back. Am I Emperor or not?
You are Emperor, Nora said.
But, your Majesty, remember your lessons. The thing that separates us from the monarchies of the East and the chaos they suffer is that our Emperor is held in check. Aesir can and will withstand a change in dynasty. Your power is absolute, but you do not exercise it all. You must not.
You were chosen,
Unokwa said,
by Aesir himself to lead.
I was chosen,
Yonagon cut in,
because nobody would shed a tear if the assassin in white came for me. Let's not play games, all right?
You performed a miracle,
Unokwa said.
Lift performed a miracle, using powers you now say are too dangerous to trust.
The three, two viziers, one scion, looked to each other.
Unokwa was their religious leader, but Nora had most seniority by year of passing the tests for master office, which she'd done, remarkably, at age 12.
Yonagon stopped by the cabin window. Outside, waves chopped, churning, rocking their ship. His smaller ship had met up with the main fleet, then joined them in taking shelter in the Vitlar Cove along the Thalen coast. But reports via Spanreed said that the Everstorm had stopped near Thalen City. A knock came at the door. Yonagon let Dalksy, least senior despite her age, call admittance. Yonagon settled in his regal chair as a guardsman with light brown skin entered. Yonagon thought he recognized the man, who held a cloth to the side of his face and winced as he gave the formal bow of admittance to the Emperor.
Vono?
Nora asked.
What happened to your charge? You were to keep her busy and distracted, yes?
I was, Your Grace,
Vono said.
Until she kicked me in my spears and stuffed me under the bed. Your Grace. Don't right know how she moved me. She's not real big, that one.
Lift? Yonagon thought. He almost cried out, demanding answers, but that would have shamed this man. Yonagon held himself back with difficulty, and Nora nodded to him in appreciation of a lesson learned.
When was this? Nora asked.
Right before we left, the guard said. Sorry, Your Grace. I've been down since then. Only now recovered.
Yonagon turned toward Nora. Surely now she would see the importance of returning. The storm had yet to advance. They could go back if... Another figure approached the door, a woman in the robes and pattern of a second-level scribe, Seventh Circle. She entered and quickly gave the formal bows to Yonagon, so hasty she forgot the third gesture of subservient obedience.
Viziers,
she said, bowing and turned to them, then to Unokwa.
News from the city.
Good news?
Nora asked hopefully.
The Alethi have turned against the Thalens and now seek to conquer them. They've been allied with the Parshmen all along. Your Grace, by fleeing, we have narrowly avoided a trap.
Quickly,
Nora said,
separate our ships from any that bear Alethi troops. We must not be caught unaware.
They left, abandoning Yonagon to the care of a dozen young scribes, who were next in line for basking in his presence. He settled into his seat, worried and afraid, feeling a sickness in his gut. The Alethi, traitors? Lift had been wrong. He had been wrong. Aesir bless them. This really was the end of days.
We are the gatekeepers, the two enormous Spren said to Shallan, speaking with voices that overlapped, as if one.
Though their mouths did not move, the voices reverberated through Shallan.
Lightweaver, you have no permission to use this portal.
But I need to get through, Shallan cried up to them. I have Stormlight to pay.
Your payment will be refused. We are locked by the word of the parent.
Your parent? Who?
The parent is dead now.
So?
We are locked. Travel to and from Shadesmar was prohibited during the parent's last days. We are bound to obey.
Behind Shallan, on the bridge, Adolin had devised a clever tactic. He acted like an illusion. Her false people had instructions to act like they were fighting, though without her direct attention, that meant they just stood around and slashed at the air. To avoid revealing himself, Adolin had chosen to do the same, slashing about with his harpoon randomly. Pattern and Syl did likewise, while the two fused hovered overhead. One held her arm, which had been hit, but now seemed to be healing. They knew someone in that mass was real, but they couldn't ascertain who. Shallan's time was short. She looked back up at the gatekeepers.
Please, the other oath gate, the one at Kolinar, let me through.
Impossible, they said. We are bound by honor, by rules Spren cannot break. This portal is closed.
Then why did you let those others through? The army that stood around here earlier.
The souls of the dead, they did not need our portal. They were called by the enemy, pulled along ancient paths to waiting hosts. You living cannot do the same. You must seek the perpendicularity to transfer.
The enormous Spren cocked their heads in concert.
We are apologetic. We have been alone very long. We would enjoy granting passage to men again, but we cannot do that which was forbidden.
Zeth of the Skybreakers hovered far above the battlefield.
The Alethi have changed sides, Aboshi?
Zeth asked.
They have seen the truth,
Nin said, hovering beside him. Only the two of them watched. Zeth did not know where the rest of the Skybreakers had gone. Nearby, the Everstorm rumbled its discontent. Red lightning rippled across the surface, passing from one cloud to the next.
All along, Zeth said, this world belonged to the Parshmen. My people watched not for the return of an invading enemy, but for the masters of the house.
Yes, Nin said. And you sought to stop them. I knew what must happen if they returned.
Nin turned toward him.
Who has jurisdiction over this land, Zeth, son Naturo? A man can rule his home until the city lord demands his taxes. The city lord controls his lands until the High Lord in turn comes to him for payment. But the High Lord must answer to the High Prince when war is called in his lands. And the king, he must answer to God. You said God was dead. Our God is dead. Another won the war by right of conquest. The original masters of this land have returned, as you so aptly made metaphor, with the keys to the house. So tell me, Zeth son Naturo, he who is about to swear the third ideal, whose law should the Skybreakers follow? That of humans, or that of the real owners of this land?
There seemed to be no choice. Nin's logic was sound. No choice at all.
Don't be stupid, the sword said. Let's go fight those guys.
The Parshmen. They are the rightful rulers of the land, Zeth said.
Rightful? Who has a right to land? Humans are always claiming things, but nobody asks the things, now do they? Well, nobody owns me. Vivenna told me. I'm my own sword.
I have no choice.
Really? Didn't you tell me you spent 1,000 years following the instructions of a rock?
More than 7 years, Sword Nimi. And I didn't follow the rock, but the words of the one who held it. I
had no choice. But it had always been nothing more than a rock. Kaladin swooped downward and passed above the treetops, rattling the glass leaves, sending a spray of broken shards behind himself. He turned upward with the slope of the mountain, adding another lashing to his speed, then another. When he passed the tree line, he lashed himself closer to the rock, skimming with obsidian only inches from his face. He used his arms to sculpt the wind around himself, angling toward a crack through the glossy black rock where two mountains met. Alive with light and wind, he didn't care if the fused were gaining on him or not. Let them watch. His angle was wrong to get through the crack, so Kaladin lashed himself back away from the mountain slope in an enormous loop, continuously changing his lashings one after another. He made a circle in the air, then darted past the fused and straight through the crack, close enough to the walls that he could feel them pass. He broke out on the other side, exhilarated. Should he have run out of stormlight by now?
He didn't use it up as quickly as he had during his early month's training.
Kaladin dove along the slopes as 3 fused popped out of the crack to follow him. He led them around the base of the obsidian mountain, then wound back toward the Oath Gate to check on Shallan and the others. As he approached, he let himself drop among the trees, still moving at incredible speed. He oriented himself as if he were diving through the chasms. Dodging these trees wasn't so different from that. He wove between them, using his body more than lashings to control his direction. His wake caused a melody of breaking glass. He exploded free of the forest and found the 4th fused, the one with his harpoon, waiting. The creature attacked, but Kaladin dodged and tore across the ground until he was passing over the sea of beads. A quick glance showed him Shallan on the platform, waving her hands over her head, the prearranged signal that she needed more time. Kaladin continued out over the sea, and beads reacted to his stormlight, rattling and surging like a wave behind him. The last fused slowed to hover in place, and the other 3 slowly emerged from the forest. Kaladin spun in another loop, beads rising in the air behind him like a column of water. He curved in an arc and came in toward the harpoon-wielding fused. Kaladin slapped the parchman's weapon aside, then swung the butt of his own lance up, catching the harpoon on the haft while he kicked his enemy in the chest. The harpoon went upward, the fused went backward. The creature pulled himself to a stop in the air with a lashing, then looked down at his hands, dumbfounded as Kaladin caught the harpoon in his free hand. The disarmed enemy barked something, then shook his head and took out his sword. He glided backward to join the other 3, who approached with fluttering robes. One of these, the male with the white face swirled with red, moved forward alone, then pointed at Kaladin with his lance and said something.
"I don't speak your language," Kaladin called back. "But if that was a challenge, you against me, I accept. Gladly."
At that moment, his stormlight ran out.
Navani finally got the rock unwedged and shoved it out of the remnants of the doorway. Other stones fell around it, opening a path out onto the wall. What was left of it? About 15 feet from where she stood, the wall ended in a ragged, broken gap. She coughed, then tucked back a lock of hair that had escaped her braid. They'd run for cover inside one of the stone guard towers along the wall, but one side had collapsed in the shaking. It had fallen on the 3 soldiers who had come to protect the queen. The poor souls. Behind, Fen led her consort, who nursed a cut scalp, out over the rubble. 2 other scribes had taken shelter with Navani and the queen, but most of the admirals had run in the other direction, taking shelter in the next guard tower along. That tower was now missing. The monster had swept it away. Now the creature stomped across the plain outside, though Navani couldn't see what had drawn its attention.
"The stairway," Fen said, pointing. "Looks like it survived."
The stairway down was fully enclosed in stone and would lead into a small guard chamber at the bottom. Maybe they could find soldiers to help the wounded and search the rubble for survivors. Navani pulled open the door, letting Fen and Kamakal head down first. Navani moved to follow, but hesitated.
"Damnation.
That sight beyond the wall was mesmerizing. The red lightning storm, the two monsters of stone, and the boiling, churning red mist along the right coast. It had no distinct shape, but somehow gave the impression of charging horses with the flesh ripped away. One of the unmade, certainly, an ancient spren of odium, a thing beyond time and history. Here. A company of soldiers had just finished pouring into the city through the gap. Another formed up outside to enter next. Navani felt a growing chill as she looked at them. Red eyes. Gasping softly, she left the stairwell and stumbled along the wall, reaching the broken stone edge. Oh, dear almighty, no! The ranks outside split, making way for a single parchwoman. Navani squinted, trying to see what was so special about her. One of the fused? Behind her, the red mist surged, sending tendrils to weave among the men, including one wearing shard plate, riding a brilliant white stallion. Amaram had changed sides. He joined an overwhelming force of void bringers in all shapes and sizes. How could they fight this? How could anyone ever fight this? Navani fell to her knees above the broken edge of the wall, and then she noticed something else. Something incongruous. Something her mind refused, at first, to accept. A solitary figure had somehow gotten around the troops who had already entered the city. He now picked his way across the rubble, wearing a blue uniform, carrying a book tucked under his arm. Unaided and defenseless, Dalinar Kolin stepped into the gap in the broken wall, and there faced the nightmare, alone.